there, I'm Mishka.
And I'm Husband Stuff.
And you're listening to Deviant, a true crime podcast. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello, how are we all?
I'm fine, how are you? How was your nap?
Not as long as I would have liked it.
I had to kick you out of bed.
You did, as usual. I like to have a little nap so I'm refreshed before recording.
Yeah.
And I did not want to get up. This is one of the problems with the clocks going back.
Yeah, it's definitely the clocks'
fault.
It's lovely
and dark and cosy and just invites me to time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How are we this week?
All right, yeah. You've had some fun migraines on the weekend.
Had super fun migraines. Yeah. It's been great. Thank you for the tip about trying coffee from Twitter. I can't remember your name. I think it was True Crime Canada. If it wasn't, I apologise. I'll find out who you are. But it did help, so thank you very much.
In fact...
No, it was True Crime Retweet. Thank you. Thank you for the tip on the coffee. It worked.
What was it?
Having some caffeine, which I don't know why I didn't try. Well, I didn't try because I was being a wuss. I didn't try it because I was worried about making it worse, but the caffeine can dilate the blood vessels in the brain, which can relieve some of the pressure. So I took the advice in the end, and I had 2 cups of popcorn coffee, and it worked a treat. Thank you.
And also, with the amount of sleep you're trying to get through as well, you're not getting your hit caffeine.
No, so, I'm trying to cut down on my caffeine intake, so...
It's crazy talk.
That could be what's causing the migraines, for all I know.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, apart from migraines, I'm okay.
Yeah, we have a slightly different format today.
Yes.
Yeah, trying something a bit new.
Just because something has happened in the UK this week that I'm sure any sort of British listeners are probably already... pretty familiar with. I was going to try and do a spoopy, fun Halloweeny case this week, and then I've been watching something unfold in the news, and I couldn't leave it alone. I wouldn't normally cover a case this new, but it is... I am so pissed off that I decided I needed to talk about it and try and put a call to action forward. So we're shuffling things about a bit this week.
Yeah, so we decided we'd try... In a slightly different format, we're going to do your regular kind of deviant case, an ongoing case, and then the criminally stupid. Because that way we can still talk about things that are ongoing. Because normally we wait until we've got the whole story, but in this case, it's happening like now. The last update was yesterday.
And when it happened yesterday, I was like, nope, I'm throwing everything I thought of out of the window. I need to talk to people about this. So...
My criminally stupid is actually very recent as well.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So who's going first?
I should go first.
You go first.
Because they say your mum might be more kind of like rage headache inducing.
Mine's super serial.
Yeah. And then we'll go on to
the
stupidity.
We're definitely going to need something to kind of stop me ripping open the mic and screaming down into it at the end.
Yes, because it's not a cheap mic. Don't break it.
No, it's not a cheap mic.
Okay. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
What's your case?
This is the case of Lucifer.
Okay, that narrows it down.
Yep. I shall begin and regale you.
Okie dokie. I wonder if I know the fake bell.
You won't.
Okay, go.
In 1995... Marcos Paulo da Silva was arrested for petty theft and sent to Serra Azul Jail, Sao Paulo in Brazil. So anything, you know anyone in Brazil? Not personally, but case-wise.
The name Marcos Pazelio is ringing a bit of a bell.
Well, I don't know if it'd be this one. It's very recent, so it might not have been covered in your other podcasts.
Okay, go on.
So, Serra Azul isn't that big of a place. It's got a population of 13,216. And from a Brit looking at it from the outside, sitting about 5,767.60 miles away, there doesn't seem to be much there to make it stand out. But who am I to judge? Feel free to correct us if you know better. After having his first year in prison, Marcos was introduced to a prison gang there. One that would offer to look out for him, like prison gangs do.
Mm-hmm.
This gang, however, was Primeiro Comando da Capital. First Command of the Capital in English, According to a 2012 Brazilian government report, it's also the largest Brazilian criminal organization with membership of almost 20,000 members, 6,000 of whom are in prison.
Wow!
Just to give
you... So it's Brazilian mafia.
Well, just to give you a little taste of what the PCC? No, that's a typo. The CCP, because it's, come on, capital. Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah. They're active in at least 22 of the country's 27 states, as well as in Peru, Venezuela, Ecuador, Paraguay, and Bolivia. Their favorite hobbies include prison breaks, prison riots, drug trafficking, and highway robbery. So powerful, in fact, they had a truce with the police.
Oh!
In 2012, that truce broke down, and there was a wave of violence that saw about 100 people killed, many of them police officers. And in 2017, they pulled off one of the biggest heists in Paraguay, stealing $8 million using a team of at least 30 men carrying heavy firepower and a 50-man team, which also used automatic rifles, anti-aircraft guns. Yes, anti-aircraft guns.
Fucking hell!
And dynamite.
Jesus!
All before escaping by speedboat and vans after splitting into three different groups. These vans threw spikes and dynamite behind them to kind of send a message of, don't fucking follow us. We'll kill you.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
That's insane!
That is. So, it's not, they're not a small deal.
Yeah,
they're kind of a big fucking thing.
I'm scared. I don't like it. Mummy.
So, Marcos's time in prison was for petty theft. That would actually be extended whilst in the PPC. I wasn't able to find anything saying as to what he did to earn this, but the length that was added, he probably wasn't very nice. More on that later.
Okay. Mad theories running through my brain already.
In 2008, bearing in mind he joined them in 1996, so he's very, very well-blooded among them, Marcos decided the PPC wasn't worth his time because it started to focus on capitalism, profit, and abandoning the struggle in favour of the prison population.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so...
My face hurts. The grimace. My face hurts. I'm very concerned.
Now, a lot of the sites I found for this were all in Brazilian. Okay. They're in Portuguese, even. And so me getting information for this was a bit limited.
Okay.
I had a good dig. I actually used Google Translate to translate an article.
That's
which,
so handy, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I've got that in the sources, which I'll give to you. But I've tried to get what I can.
Okay.
Now, during his time in the PPC, he got a chance to learn a lot about them, what the people were like and what they did. For Marcos, he decided that he didn't like them too much.
Oh, God.
Now,
you never turn on the mafia.
While in prison, he'd gotten a number of tattoos. This includes one across his chest that read, Lucifer, my protector.
Ooh.
As well as skulls, demons, a trident, and swastikas.
Oh, no. Oh.
Fun fact. In 1939, at the start of World War II, Sao Paulo had the largest number of Nazis in Brazil, with 785 of the buggers.
But why?
Why? Why were there so many?
In Brazil?
Because, I did actually do the research on this. There was a massive amount of like German migrants that went over to Brazil.
Okay.
There was actually like thousands and thousands of them spread across the country,
right?
In different areas, this just had the highest population of them. But they didn't; they couldn't enter any kind of political power. They had this, was they did kind of have a Nazi party there. It wasn't a political one.
Okay.
And
it was more like a gross, gross, horrible private club.
Yeah.
Ew.
But after World War II started, new government came into place, which the name translated, funny enough, to a dictatorship, and the. Basically, the Nazi party there was just outruled and said, you don't fucking exist because we're a dictatorship now.
But obviously, their sentiments were embraced by certain people.
Yeah, well, like we saw in Top Gear, when they were driving through, a lot of they scampered off.
Yeah, because, they took, like, refuge there, didn't they?
Because they were already there. It was safe and away from the people.
That creepy German town there.
Yes.
Oh.
Not saying everyone there is creepy.
No, it's just the sort of skeletons that have been left behind.
Yeah, just for context, what the hell we're talking about there. Top Gear, the fantastic show, until they try to recast it. What are you doing? Yeah, they used to do lots of big adventure drives where they go all over the place on big old journeys. And one of them had them go through South America. And they literally went through a town where a lot of people escaping kind of retribution for what they'd done in service of the Nazi Party. They all escaped there. So it's a town with a very, very dark history.
And it looks very Germanic.
Yeah.
It's really strange.
It looks like the kind of place you wouldn't want to go unless you're in a B-52 bomber.
No.
Or on Top Gear.
But it's all now been sort of taken back by the community, hasn't it? Because wasn't it something like it had the largest population of Nazi criminals in South America in that one town?
Possibly.
I'm sure Jeremy Clarkson said that.
Well, we can rewatch that episode. We'll rewatch that episode.
Yes, I'll put a link to it down below.
Yeah. Anyway, with the name Lucifer across his chest, you can imagine what nickname he obtained.
El Diablo.
No, Lucifer.
Oh. It's Portuguese, not Spanish, isn't it? I'm sorry, I'm ignorant.
So Lucifer used his name to form his own gang. This is where anyone that knows any hint of Portuguese will go, hey, what did you do? It's like an Englishman. His gang, the Hermandad de Resgate do Bondo Carol Finino, roughly translating to Carol Finino Rescue Brotherhood. Corrections are welcome. I actually put that corrections away. Now, I tried to look into what the name means, because Carol Fininho is clearly an important name. It could be a person, it could also be a beer. There is a beer in Brazil called Carol Fininho, as well as a footballer and a few musical acts. This Rescue Brotherhood became known as one of the 9 criminal factions in the heart of the Sao Paulo prison system. No other prison system has that many factions in it. The Rescue Brotherhood members had a simple mission: kill their enemies. Mainly, of the PCC.
Oh my lord, it's just full on gang warfare.
Well, we'll get into the reasons. It was mandatory, however, to behead them and make their insides their outsides.
Ew!
Yeah. Now, I've got some theories as to the name, Carol Finijo. Now, obviously, he was in prison for a very long time. He would have known a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely a name. Part of the statute. Because Marcus actually wrote down the rules for being as part of the Brotherhood, is if you were to kill a member of the PCC, you had to write the name
we're so British, sorry.
Yeah. It's just a pronunciation. I know I'm bollocking this. They have to write the name Carol Fininho with blood on the wall. And in the yards and stuff, just to kind of like keep this name alive. So I think that what's happened is Carol Fininho was a friend of Marcos.
Uh-huh.
And either someone in the PCC killed him, and that really fucking pissed off Marcos, or Marcos himself, as a member of the PCC, had to kill him.
Right.
And then reflected back on it and said, no.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is all speculation, of course, that with, obviously, the Brazilian prison system, you're not going to get much out of it.
It's probably difficult to get more information.
Yeah, but my fear is it's someone that would have been close to him, and it's kind of like they're doing it in his name, because it's the name of the Rescue Brotherhood of Carafinino.
Yeah.
So, that's my theory.
Okay.
So, on the 9th of September 2011, he identified 5 members of the CCP in Cerro Azul jail, either from his time among them or due to someone finding information out, finding him, pointing him out. I don't know, but he knew those fuckers were part of my old crew, and I don't like those fuckers. So what Marcos done? He took all 5 of them down with fire extinguishers in the same sitting. So he literally, in the same fight, he took 5 of them down with fire extinguishers, knocking them out cold. This was all just to make moving their heads. Yeah. Yeah, he battered them until they were unconscious, but this was just to make removing their heads with the homemade knife a bit easier.
Oh!
Yeah, while partaking in the most infamous jail massacre to date, he yelled aloud to surrounding inmates and wardens alike, "I love this. There's so few. I want to kill more prisoners." Now,
crazy motherfucker.
Now, you might be thinking, what made him like this? He was jailed for petty theft.
What?
This is going a bit beyond what 18-year-old Marcos was first thrown in the clink for. Well, you might remember how I said, we'll come back to that. While working with CCP, Marcos's role was, and this might be the translation error from Jos Margesino's article, which will be linked in the notes, his role among the gang was an exterminator.
Oh my gosh.
The CCP would give him a name, and it would be down to Marcos to find the inmate and kill them. Due to the nature of the prison system there and how powerful the CCP was, there's no record I could find the detail of this more. All I could find is Jos Margesino's article, which explains as to why he had such a long stint in prison. Bearing in mind, he went in 1995.
For petty theft.
Yep. The long sentence was for crimes committed inside the prison, such as murders and damage to property.
This is what you see, though. You see people put into, like, hard prisons for petty crimes, and they're turned into violent criminals by the system.
And with the Brazilian prison system, with so many gangs there, it's like you've seen on movies and TV shows, join us and you won't get stabbed, or they won't stab you. It's
to survive.
Yeah, join us, or everyone around you is going to make your life hell. So,
worse.
You can only assume that he killed a few people. But why did he kill them? Earlier, I said about how the CCP had turned their focus to capitalism and didn't really focus on the struggles of the inmates. Marcos clearly had a love for his fellow inmates. Looking at his own situation, he was jailed for petty theft. Now he's a murderer. Gangs and organizations are rife, and it's easy for someone just like himself to get wound up in a world of blood and violence, doing what they're asked to because someone higher up the chain told them to. Marcos wanted to grab that chain and pull it to the ground. Remember how I said Marcos learnt a lot of who the people in the CCP were?
Yeah.
Marcos had identified people who stole from other inmates and were rapists both inside and outside the prison. And for that, Marcos regret nothing.
Oh, gosh.
After killing 5 CCP members in a single attack, he had 2 rivals murdered in another prison in February 2015. He was given an additional 66 years and hospitalization in RDD, which is Differentiated Disciplinary Regime. At this point, he had 30 serious disciplinary offences on his prison record. Now, note that this is serious offences. Bugger knows how many others he had. Psychologists in Sao Paulo prison system got a chance to review him, and they reported Lucifer's high dangerousness is not due to mental illness, but to antisocial personality disorder.
He's a psychopath.
Well,
sociopath.
Well, yeah. Well, it's the thing. He done what he'd done.
No emotion. He's a sociopath. Yeah.
6 years after forming the Carolfinino Rescue Brotherhood, the Serra Azul Penitentiary requested he be removed and sent into federal prison. He would then be passed through Porto Valho, Campo Grande, and Catan do Vaz. While in Catan do Vaz, he mutilated himself, cutting his arms, legs, and belly, and had to be cuffed to a bed by resident doctors. In January 2018, he was then sent back to Sao Paulo, and then did up back again in Catan do Vaz in November the same year. Prison officers reported that the federal prison system just didn't want him.
Oh my god!
Psychologists at Catan do Vaz, they actually said, look, they basically said, look, this guy needs help. And we sure as shit can't provide that to him. He needs a proper structure and treatment from a specialized multidisciplinary team.
Yeah.
So naturally, he ended back at Presidente Valenzuela Penitentiary, where he had already enacted his reign of terror and was roundly feared by the other inmates there. And he remains there to this day.
Oh my god. So he's still in Gen Pop? Like, they haven't even put him in solitary or something. Well, I suppose what difference would it make if he's got his own organization that's spreading through different prisons? Oh my god.
Now,
and obviously, like, the prison system, the officers there are very corrupt.
A little bit,
even if they put him in solitary, he can still operate through the sort of prison officers and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, if you, literally in researching this, if you Google Brazil corruption.
Yeah.
You get two more results than I would get, do you?
Yeah.
Now, due to his long, bloody and violent record, Marcos has been sentenced for 6 murders, including the 5 CCP members mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
one which I'm not able to find information on, and for ordering the deaths of 2 other inmates. His total sentencing reaching, brace yourself,
mm-hmm.
brace yourself, listener, 217 years and 3 months.
Oh my God. I bet he has no fucks to give.
No fucks to give. Because during his sentencing, he confessed to the judge he killed as many as 48 people in state prisons.
I can believe it.
Yeah.
I really can. Yeah.
How many of which were by orders of the CCP or members of the CCP themselves, it's unknown. His carelessness for the lives he ended, his orders to disembowel victims due to things they have done to other people, and his evolution from petty theft to leader of one of Brazil's 9 prison criminal organizations most definitely makes Marcos Paulo da Silva a deviant.
Too fucking right. Jesus. Can you imagine, like, seeing this guy? Like, never mind the level of... Fuck, the level of physical strength he must have to take down 5 other prisoners at once.
With a fire extinguisher.
With a fire extinguisher.
And then behead them with a homemade knife.
And he's being watched. Can you imagine witnessing that? And no wonder the name Lucifer stuck.
Yeah, he would proper strike terror in people around him.
Have you got a picture of him?
I do.
We'll put one up on the Instagram. I'm not surprised the guards didn't intervene, to be honest. I'd be bloody terrified.
Okay, so this is once he was restrained after doing his self-mutilation.
Okay. He's tiny!
But look at him, though.
He's totally fucked himself.
He'd done
up.
That all to himself.
Why?
Don't know.
Jeez.
But this is a guy that wants to be feared.
Look at him. He's just covered in staples.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But I thought he would be like this massive fucking, like, Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
No.
Isn't it? That speaks, though, to what...
What fire extinguisher and a ready knife can do.
Well, that speaks to what pure rage can do for a woman, for somebody's personal strength.
Yeah. His personal hatred for them is because they stole from inmates and they were rapists.
Yeah.
That was what he said to the judge, was why he had no fucking remorse for what he'd done. So what the hell could have happened to Carol Fanino?
Yeah.
You know, to make him be like, right, find these guys, kill them, disembowel them.
Same.
Yeah. Because in his view, everything he's doing to these guys
perfectly
is
perfectly justifiable.
It's justified, 100%.
Feel slightly sick now. I've got enchiladas for dinner tonight as well.
Wow.
All that red stickiness.
More cheese sauce then, eh? More guacamole.
Yes, lots and lots of guacamole. Cover it up.
So yeah, how was that?
That was... See, I don't normally, like, look at stuff such as organised crime and things like that. So you find things that I have never heard of. I thought I knew who this was, but I was completely wrong. I thought it was a drug runner.
No.
And that's not the sort of thing that I would ever normally be exposed to. And I'm just... Life in a Brazilian prison must be hell.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Some bad things happen in Brazilian prisons.
Yeah.
Your turn.
My turn.
Is it going to be grimmer than that?
I don't think you can quantify the two stories against each other.
Okay.
They're very different things.
Okay.
What mine is about is an enormous miscarriage of justice.
That happens a lot on this show, doesn't it?
Yeah. This one's real bad, though. And this happened yesterday.
It's still an ongoing case. So this is something that we could be coming back to.
This is something that I hope we're going to come back to. I think there will be more information that comes out around this. And this is why we've done a story each this week, because I couldn't find a great deal, particularly about the victim in this case, which really, really bothers me.
You mean like with the Oscar Pistorius TV thing?
It lit. That's really funny. Actually, because I do draw a parallel between that and this case.
Yes.
Yeah? Yes.
Ah. And for the context, chatting yesterday, there was Mish saw on one of the Facebook groups for
Red Handed. Excellent podcast.
Excellent.
We'll go and listen to them.
There was a trailer up for a, was it a TV documentary thing?
Yeah, by the BBC.
Yeah, by the BBC.
By the BBC.
Fucking hell. I'm so looking forward to when we move because I'm not going to get a TV license.
No.
And if they phone up, I'm going to say, like, fuck you. Doctor Who's shit now anyway. There's literally no reason for me to pay the TV license.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they said about, oh, it's a documentary about Oscar Pistorius and how he killed his girlfriend. What's her fucking name, huh?
Mm-hmm. It's all about his trials and tribulations and his past successes. What about Reva Steenkamp?
Yeah.
You know, why are you making a sensationalized media piece about a murderer? And what about the woman that he shot through a bathroom door for no reason?
And it was like on bloody Family Guy.
Mm.
Where I was like, what's happening? Is there a home intruder? And like this Meg and Peter and the Landon.
We're going to cover it at some point. That was one that I would like to probably split across a two-parter.
And I just want to add as well, even though we like saying like the victim's name and stuff, the reason I didn't have any victim names in my story...
Couldn't find them.
Mm. No, because the... I put the source for the main source for the story, and he couldn't get anything either. He actually tried to get more information from the jail, and they're like, no comment.
They're not going to tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, as well, if the CCP then says, oh, yeah, these are five of our guys were killed, that's going to make them look weaker.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a guy declared war on their entire fucking thing, and he seems to be winning.
But yeah, from my perspective, when I cover a case, I want to make sure that these victims have names and they are seen as people and they are seen as more than just the circumstances of their death. But in this case, unfortunately, because it is so fresh and so raw and the media is going nuts and social media is going nuts and women's rights groups are going nuts... the victim's family has understandably closed ranks a little bit to try and protect themselves because this woman has two small children. Yeah. So today I am going to tell you about the case of Claire Parry, who was 41 years old and was killed, and I have to say killed and not murdered, by her lover Timothy Bremer, who is was a Dorset policeman.
Why do you need to make that differentiation?
He's not a policeman anymore. Oh, why do I need to make the differentiation between killed and murdered?
Yeah.
Because he was found not guilty of murder. Let me tell you the story.
Of how he totally didn't murder her.
It was an accident. Claire Parry was 41 years old, a mother to two children, one boy, one girl, and wife to Andrew Parry, a Dorset police officer. She was a talented and dedicated nurse practitioner at a medical centre in Bournemouth, who was loved by her colleagues and patients alike, and who was known to have a particular talent for working with paediatric patients. She was very good with children. Claire was a devoted and loving mother, but she and Andrew did experience difficulties within their marriage, and around 10 to 11 years ago, Claire began an extramarital affair with Timothy Bremer, a police constable with the Dorset Police. Bremer was also married and a father to one son. His wife, Martha, is also a police officer for Dorset. So Claire's husband, Timothy, and Martha are all kind of colleagues.
Right.
Okay. Claire and Bremer met in 2005 while Bremer was working in his capacity as an officer. He was on shift. And before I go any further, it's really important to say as well that Claire does not have a voice in any of this because she is dead. So any statements or quotes that we have about her and about the circumstances of the relationship only come from Timothy Bremer. And it's really, really important to bear that in mind with some of the things that he claims.
So he could be talking complete shit.
Yeah, out of his ass. Absolutely.
Okay.
According
I'd say in that case then, preface any statement with
I am.
Apparently.
I am. I've got claimed and quote marks. Don't worry, I'm very
okay.
I'm very heavy on the quote unquotes this week.
Okay.
Guys.
Good.
According to statements Bremer made in court this week, he claimed that although they were flirtatious when they met in 2005, the relationship did not develop between them into a full affair until somewhere between 2010 and 2011. He described it as being, quote, on and off again, and that they would not talk when big events occurred in their respective lives, such as things like the births of their children, but they would pick up in contact with each other in the down times in their lives. A quote from Bremer about the relationship between them and how he views it.
Apparently.
We didn't have to worry about things like the domestic things at home. You could be all of your good things, not your bad things, none of your vulnerabilities. It was a suspended state of your best self. It was an affair. That's what you have an affair for. I didn't want to inadvertently destroy my family, which has happened anyway. So the relationship that we had, Claire and I, it was compartmentalised as it was, and it had been for years. It was its own little bubble, a little bubble of niceness. So translation, in my opinion, of that is, I didn't care about her as a person. I just enjoyed going somewhere to fuck and not think about being a husband and a father. In March of this year, Andrew Parry, Claire's husband, became suspicious of the affair. He found Valentine's Day cards and budget hotel key cards and took to tracking Claire using a mobile phone device. Ultimately, he confronted Bremer with his suspicions, because don't forget, they knew each other.
Okay.
And these suspicions were denied, but Andrew seemed to think that he was still onto something, and he and Claire began to attend marriage counselling. The pair were going to separate. However, in March of this year, lockdown also began in this country due to coronavirus, and so the two had to continue living with one another.
Sweet. So I would say, having hotel key cards knock around is suspicious as shit.
Yeah.
But I still...
I was going to say,
I've
got
a collection.
Because you collect
Yeah,
them.
Because whenever we've gone on holiday, we get an extra set. And I keep one.
We still got the towel key card that you stole from
we
our
do.
Honeymoon tacked to our fridge. So we went to one of these all-inclusive resorts
yeah.
in Tenerife for our honeymoon. And they gave you a card to get towels for the pool and the spa. And you couldn't get clean towels until you handed the card over, because it was to stop you nicking them. So at the
so
end
I nicked
of
the
card holiday,
instead.
He nicked the card instead. And it's still magneted
it's on the fridge.
To our fridge.
Yeah. It's a thing. It's a souvenir that you're not going to take.
Yeah.
So I take them. I've got loads.
You've
from...
got loads of like Holiday Inn cards, haven't
yeah.
you? Because I remember you taking one when we were in Glastonbury, and it wasn't even our hotel. You
did
took
I?
Liam and Cindy's.
Oh.
You did, at the coffee table, because we met
yes.
them for coffee in the morning.
Yeah.
He took his brother's key card from a hotel that he wasn't even staying in.
Yeah. And I got loads from Dublin.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I went there for my 18th.
Such a tea lane.
Yeah. So I won't say having random key cards is suspicious.
No, but in combination with other things, it doesn't necessarily look good.
Yeah.
Bremer claimed that during the lockdown period, he and Claire, quote, didn't really see one another. However, on May the 6th this year, during work hours while he was on duty at Bournemouth Airport, Bremer left his post there.
At the airport?
Yeah.
Oof.
And went to Claire's home in order to engage in sex with her. During work hours, while he was on shift, supposed to be protecting the airport.
At an airport as well?
Mm-hmm.
Fucking hell.
So he left the airport.
Is he still at his job?
Anymore.
Okay. I mean, like, just abandoning posts at an airport
yep.
of all fucking places.
Yep.
Not only because, you know, terrorism happens, but also because global pandemic currently happens.
Yep.
You know, you need someone to make sure that, you know.
People are kept safe.
Yeah.
But he wanted to get his underwear, so it didn't matter. That same day, though, in the evening after he'd gone, Claire contacted a colleague of his, Detective Constable Kate Rhodes through social media. She was using a fake Facebook account so that the basically her presence on the pages couldn't be traced by him. And the reason that she'd done this is because that Claire had had her suspicions for a while that she was not the only woman that Bremer was sleeping with, and she wanted to get to the bottom of the matter and find out the truth and whether she was just being used. Because I think that she really did care for him, and as her marriage broke down, she thought there might be a potential for a relationship between them.
Right.
Which, considering he'd strung her along for a decade, is not an unreasonable assumption. At the same time that he'd begun his sexual relationship with Claire, Bremer had also begun an affair with Kate Rhodes.
The one on Facebook?
Yep.
Okay.
So she was a community support officer at the time, and it seems that Bremer used his superior position within the constabulary to groom her. She describes him as being coercive and controlling, and as if he had some sort of hold over her. He didn't tell her that he was married either. He told her he was single. After she found out that he was married, she broke off the relationship immediately. For years after this, Bremer would torment her with sexually explicit and aggressive texts, calling her things like a dirty bitch and asking her for sex. This behaviour continued even when Kate later married. Bremer refused to leave her alone and would deliberately ramp up the abusive messages when he knew she was with her husband in order to torment her.
What a piece of shit.
So he would text her going, slap, dirty whore, suck me off, while she was on holiday with her husband, while she was on honeymoon at Christmas.
Fucking hell.
Mm-hmm. Over the course of their discussions, Kate and Claire realised that not only was Bremer a serial womaniser who was known to target vulnerable women within the police force and other emergency services, he was known on at least one occasion to target women who had just been through bad breakups and go telling them that he was single and did they want a shoulder to cry. They also realised he was engaging in at least two other affairs in the current moment with other officers within Dorset Police while he was leaving his work at the airport to have sex with Claire. Realising that all the times that Bremer had told her, you're the only one for me,
yeah,
had been lies, Claire saw him in a whole new light and told Kate that she was going to take him down and reveal his womanizing ways. And there's a quote here, it's messages between Claire and Kate, and Claire said to her, my marriage has fallen apart as a result of him, so I don't see how he should just get away with it. I hate the fact that Tim is getting away with destroying women's self-esteem and lives. I am embarking on a slow and prolonged downfall of Mr. Manwhore Bremer.
Manwhore Bremer.
Yep. Over the next 2 days, Claire confronted Bremer over a series of texts, calling him out on his womanising and his aggressive behaviour towards ex-partners, with Kate Rhodes having told her during their conversations that Bremer had, quote, left me broken. It's a nasty
now,
piece of work.
Was she still married at the time or was it falling apart?
No, Kate is happily married. This was before she met her husband.
Right.
But he was very controlling and manipulative. And as we've seen, even when she broke off the relationship, the moment she found out he was married, he tortured her.
Right. Because he's a piece of shit.
Yeah. And Claire was like, he's doing this to other women. He's doing this to me.
But, I mean, Claire was... What, didn't
Claire
say...
is still married.
Right. They're so going... it's not like she can go to the higher ups on the police force, because then that'll kind of...
Because then that'll drag it all out for her husband.
Yeah, and that'll
as well.
Definitely fuck her.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Claire also threatened to tell Bremer's wife about the affair, feeling that after her own marriage had already fallen apart, she didn't have anything else left to lose by exposing the secret. On May the 8th, 2020, Timothy Bremer worked a night shift and on his way home the next morning made a phone call to Claire. She demanded access to his social media accounts, apparently, wanting to see who else he had been having relationships with and exchanging messages with. He says he gave Claire access to his social media sites and claims that on the phone call, as she went through them, she became, quote, vindictive and laughed at his, quote, perfect life. So what we are seeing here is the beginning of some serious victim blaming. He's calling her a nasty woman. Okay?
Even though he's
the piece of shit here.
Yeah, quantifiably he's a piece of shit.
He's a piece of shit. Claire then asked Bremer to meet her at the Horns Inn pub at 3 p.m. on the 9th of May 2020 in order to discuss things in person. On the way to the pub, Bremer claims that he ordered a rope on Click and Collect from Screwfix, a wholesale trader's supply company here in the UK, with the intent of using it to kill himself. But funnily enough, he did not pick it up. The Horns Inn pub was closed at the time due to the lockdown in the UK, and the car park there was empty, except for these two, when Bremer arrived at 2:41 p.m. and Claire at 2:44 p.m, caught on the pub's CCTV camera entering the car park. Claire got into Bremer's car and confronted him about his multiple affairs. At some point over the course of the conversation, she got a hold of his mobile phone. And at 3:02 p.m, she sent a text from his phone to his wife, Martha, reading, quote, "I'm cheating on you." Bremer then stabbed himself in his left forearm with a penknife that he had in the car to show Claire, quote, and this is a quote from Bremer, how serious he was about killing himself. He would also, just to make you aware, tell investigators when they first arrived on the scene that Claire had been the one to stab him in the car, but later changed his story.
Just for context, this case is not that widely known, because of how quote-unquote serious he is to kill himself. British police don't actually have firearms, so that's
not
why...
Not most of them.
That's why you have videos of our police officers being chased around by someone with a stick, because they're literally... But continue. It's just because people are wondering why he didn't just pop himself.
Yeah.
He can't.
He doesn't own a gun, more than likely.
No. Unless it was at the...
It would be at the station if he had a if he had a firearm.
Although you do get armed police at the airports. Mm-hmm. He's not on duty, so he wouldn't have had it.
At some point over the next few minutes, Timothy Bremer reset his phone to factory settings. He claims he does this so that, quote, nobody could find him when he killed himself. Bearing in mind, he is a police officer who has worked serious crimes, including things like homicide. If you've got incriminating evidence on your phone, what's the first thing you do? Wipe it.
Yeah.
Right? I call bullshit.
And you snap the SIM card. And pretty much every TV show ever, you snap the SIM card and you throw it into the river.
Obviously, he's not very good, though, because it takes more than that to completely lose data from him these days. Yay for the cloud! At some point in the 18 minutes between 3:02 p.m. and 3:20 p.m, Timothy Bremer strangled Claire Parry in his car, applying enough force that he broke a bone in her neck. The car is not visible on the CCTV images, unfortunately. He then left the car, walked to the edge of the car park and onto the street outside it, and sat on the pavement, where he was found a few moments later by a family out for a walk with their young child. He's covered in blood. Mm-hmm. The family called emergency services and both police and paramedics attended the scene. James Best, the first paramedic on scene, said he saw Bremer, but was called over by one of the members of the family who had found him to Claire Parry, who was lying half out of Bremer's Citroen car in the car park. A quote from James Best: "As I approached, I saw a female laying half in, half out of the Citroen. Her head was on the ground, but her body was more in the car, with her feet in the driver's footwell. It looked almost as if she had fallen asleep leaning on the door, and then it had been opened. She had fallen half out of the car with her face on the ground. She had blue lips, and it was obvious to me that she was not breathing. I checked for her pulse, and she did not have one." He also realised, as his colleagues began performing life-saving measures on Claire, that he recognised her. And after he found her NHS ID card on her, he realised she had once been his colleague in a hospital that he had socialised regularly with. Yeah. They'd been friends. Awful. As they worked on Claire, paramedics managed to get a pulse back, but it was extremely weak and she was unresponsive. She also had a stark white and red band across her throat, a clear mark of sustained pressure on her neck. They stabilised her enough to move her and took her to the Royal Bournemouth Hospital for treatment, where she was well known amongst the staff. Body cam footage from one of the police officers on scene while Bremer is being treated for his injuries show him sobbing hysterically, crying things like, quote, "I can't remember what happened," over and over. He also made statements such as, "I fucked up. I've been having an affair for years. She was going to tell my wife. I'm afraid I'm going to lose my boy, so I met her here. She told my wife. I don't remember the rest. What is my mum going to say? She was so angry. I'm a good man. I think she stabbed me. I'm the victim." So those statements as well from sort of, I really am interested in things like forensic linguistics and the use of language and how it can belay, like, how it can evidence somebody's pattern of thought and behaviours. Mm-hmm. And all this, I'm a good man, I fucked up, she stabbed me, she was so angry, what is my mum going to say? It's all about him. It's not, oh my God, yeah, I've killed her. Oh my God, is she okay? Oh my God, is she going to be all right? It's all about him.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Despite these hysterics, once he was in the ambulance, Bremer is very calm. And he remains so while his initial statements are being taken and verified by police. It is only when he's told he's being arrested that he starts hyperventilating and sobbing again. I've seen this body cam footage. It's fucking disgusting.
I've actually seen that kind of behaviour before.
Uh-huh.
There was this cruiser cam. You know, they got the camera that fell on the back seat where they arrest someone. Yeah. A woman was DUI, very DUI.
Yeah.
Caused an accident, killed someone.
Jesus.
And she was fucking out of it. They arrested her, had the back of the car, and she's just like, "Oh, what's going on?" Because she like doesn't understand what she's done. And the policeman is like, "You do realize what's just happened, right?" And they're like, "No, someone's died." And then she has a brief bit of, "Oh my God, that's terrible. Oh God." And then she gets really fucking aggressive and starts kicking the seat stuff, saying, "Get me out of here. Let me out of here. I didn't do anything wrong."
Mm-hmm. So no concern for the victim at all. It's all about them.
Yep. That video was also used in evidence in court and she got thrown away for it.
Good.
Rightly so.
Drink and drive is disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
You might as well hand somebody a gun.
Do I have one?
No, because you don't drink.
Oh.
Bremer was arrested and charged with murder, taking it into custody once he had received treatment for his injuries. Sadly, Claire Parry did not recover from her injury. She died on the 10th of May 2020 at Bournemouth Royal Hospital. Her cause of death was ruled by coroner's inquest to be an hypoxic ischemic brain injury. This is a brain injury caused by severe constriction of blood flow and therefore oxygen to the brain. This injury would only have been caused by at least 30 seconds of intense pressure to the neck.
That sounds like kind of thing of murder.
It does sound a bit like, like somebody's been murdered, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing you'd expect to see in a murder inquiry, right?
I mean, hang on. Let's, hold the phone. Let me get the clock app. Okay, so I'll just put reset. So I'm gonna do a 30-second timer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and this is how long she would have been strangled for.
Okay, we're just gonna sit here in silence for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Right.
That's how long he was strangling her. Minimum.
With sustained and severe pressure.
Yeah. So if it's
minimum to cause that injury.
Yeah. So I think that silence there was where his hands were around her neck, trying to literally.
Not his hands.
The rope.
No.
Huh?
I'm gonna give you some more details.
Right.
It wasn't his hands.
But that's how long.
Minimum.
Minimum. What he was doing was cutting the circulation.
That felt quite long to me. Did that feel like quite a long time of silence
that
to
did.
You? It felt like
and,
quite a long time.
And for the listeners, that was 30 seconds of breathing.
Yeah.
How's that ASMR in the middle of this episode?
My heavy breathing with occasional possible...
Those sounds you don't notice you're doing sometimes.
Don't. I am the one that has to edit all of this.
Carry on.
Some other information then, apart from that minimum 30 seconds to consider.
Minimum.
And this is information to consider around the force of injury and also the information, or and also the trial for Timothy Bremer that we're going to discuss next. On average, dependent on circumstances, death by strangulation takes between 4 and 6 minutes. It requires a great deal of strength to compress a windpipe. However, strangling someone in a chokehold from behind exerts considerable more force. Even after strangulation induces cardiac arrest, it takes 3 minutes for full brain death. There is a 3-minute window of time to administer life-saving measures to someone who has been strangled, and if done effectively, there is a possibility for full recovery. Timothy Bremer knew all of this because he was a highly trained emergency services officer who had not only had extensive first aid training, but also knew how to render safe restrictive holds and what holds on a person could be dangerous or even deadly. Just some things to bear in mind.
And just to quantify as well, with the use for chokehold, a chokehold done correctly doesn't actually affect the windpipe.
No, because it's across the chest.
There's a video I could show you, but basically, the 2 points on a neck where you take the pulse. Oh,
that was my pop filter.
the filter just fell off the mic box. Let me just pop that on there.
Yeah.
Russell. The two long things on here, it's basically where you apply pressure to them and the brain goes into emergency shutdown. So when people pass out, that's a self-preservation thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he's purposefully doing it the wrong way.
Yep. Because he knows exactly what will kill
her. For murdering her.
Yeah, I mean, that would be... You would know how to murder somebody with a choke like that if you've been trained how to do it safely and what is not safe.
But was it murder?
Well...
I mean, it sounds like murder.
From the moment of his arrest... Timothy Bremer claimed that his killing of Claire Parry was an accident.
Really? He accidentally murdered her?
He accidentally killed her, apparently.
Oh.
Even though it took at least 30 seconds, which we timed out there. That was a long time.
I mean, pretty sure the listeners here...
That probably felt like forever to them.
Yeah, you're probably nodding right now going, that was a fucking long 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff breathes really heavily.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't lie, to be fair. So, at first, he claimed that after Claire had texted his wife revealing the affair, she had tried to get out of his car and he had pulled her back in. And that is how he strangled and killed her. Then, his story changed. He claimed that he told her to get out of his car because he wanted to go and kill himself. But she wouldn't. And so he tried to push her roughly out of the car. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Try and figure out the mechanics of that in your head. If he's claiming that he pushed her...
I'm pretty sure there was some pushing going on. There was some effort being...
How did he manage to throw his arm around her neck and crush if he was trying to push her away?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd love to see what his understanding of physics...
How does they work?
It does it?
I mean, if I took the handbrake off the car and then tried to push it, it'll come towards me, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
fucking stupid. Who's he trying to convince? What idiot actually believed this?
You're going to be real mad.
For fuck's sake.
Timothy Bremer also claimed that he had no idea Claire was unconscious when he got out of the car, despite the fact that he dropped her face first out of the vehicle onto the pavement and left her there. And that, again, he was an extremely experienced officer who had performed life-saving measures on others in the line of duty many times before. But he had no idea that she was unconscious. He thought she was just catching her breath.
On the floor.
On the floor, where he dropped her, face first, onto the concrete. On July 8th, 2020, Timothy Bremer appeared before Winchester Crown Court and admitted manslaughter, but entered a plea of not guilty to murder, continuing his claim that Claire's death was accidental. The Crown Prosecution Service wanted to continue the murder charge, however, despite Bremer's plea for manslaughter, and trial began on the 12th of October at Salisbury Crown Court. The defence based their case on, quote, and this makes me want to vomit, Mr. Bremer strangled Mrs. Parry by accident during a kerfuffle. That is a direct quote from his lawyer. It was a kerfuffle. A kerfuffle is if you accidentally bump into somebody when you're getting off the bus or, you know, knock them with your shopping bag. A kerfuffle is not taking a mother of two by the throat and crushing her windpipe.
People actually believed this, yeah?
Yeah, they did.
How?
I don't know. Over the course of the trial, the court heard multiple testimonials of Timothy Bremer's coercive, controlling and vindictive behaviour towards women, with Kate Rhodes being one of the witnesses called to testify. They also heard of the full extent of Claire's injuries and the level of extreme force it would have taken to inflict them, with the most likely scenario being that Timothy Bremer had wrapped his arm around her throat from behind when she had tried to escape him from the car and crushed her neck. And again, I cannot stress it enough, it took a really long time for her to die.
You mean when he murdered her?
Not according to the court, he didn't. The court also heard how Bremer had left his home on 12 p.m. on the 9th of May, telling his wife that he was just going out to buy steaks for a barbecue that they were due to have that afternoon, and that he would be home shortly. When Martha had not heard from him after 2.5 hours, she began to worry. Then, after she received the text revealing he was cheating at 3:02 p.m, she frantically tried to call him. She didn't believe the text, she thought that there was something seriously wrong. She was unable to get in contact with him, though. She was sure that he had been hurt or was even dead, and that when her and his police colleagues called her that evening, that they were going to give her the news that every policeman's partner dreads, that he had been killed. However, they were calling her to tell her that he had been arrested. Poor Martha had been mourning her husband while he was in the process of being detained for killing another woman. This poor woman.
This guy's a real piece of shit.
He's an absolute piece of shit. The trial continued for 15 days, but on the 27th of October, so just two days ago at the time of recording this... Despite the overwhelming evidence presented, the jury acquitted Timothy Bremer of the murder of Claire Parry, finding him not guilty. The most that the court could now sentence him on was his previous admittance of murder.
Manslaughter.
Yeah, there we go. That was a Freudian slip.
I mean, it was murder, but...
The most that the court could now sentence him on was his previous admittance of manslaughter. Now, manslaughter means, in the UK, that there was no premeditation. Basically, they are accepting his claims that he killed Claire Parry by accident. How? So, on the 28th of October, so yesterday at the time of recording, Mr. Justice Jacobs, who oversaw the trial, told Bremer that he was basing the sentence he was going to hand down on him on, quote, You lost your self-control following the sending of the text message to your wife where the affair was revealed, rather than on the basis that you had no intention to kill or cause serious harm. I am sure that you did deliberately take Claire Parry by the neck, applying significant force with your forearm or the crook of your elbow for a period of time while she struggled against you, thereby causing severe neck injuries. The evidence from the pathologist was that those injuries, which she described as severe on a scale of mild, moderate or severe, resulted from the application of significant force to the neck for a period of a minimum of 10 to 30 seconds, and possibly longer. She said it was difficult to envisage a situation where a struggle in a car imparted the necessary degree of force or could explain the extent and severity of the neck injuries. So the fucking coroner's inquest is saying there is no way this was an accident and he's still not done for murder.
Timothy Bremner, the murderer.
Timothy Bremner. Not according to the justice system, he's not. We can't call him a murderer.
Okay. I'll do it this way then. Rumour has it, Timothy Bremner
allegedly
is a murderer.
The judge also added that it was clear that not only had Timothy Bremner done nothing to help Claire Parry after he strangled her,
despite knowing how to,
but that he did also not believe Bremner's claims, that he hadn't realised Claire was, and this was a quote, this is how Timothy Bremner referred to Claire when he abandoned her face down on the concrete after he killed her. He refers to her as being poorly. He didn't know she was poorly.
Oh, fucking hell, really?
And that he was sure Bremner had known not only that she was dead, but that he could have helped her. And instead he left her and walked across the car park.
What fucking scoop heads actually believe this?
I don't know. I cannot fathom how they found him not guilty. Timothy Bremner was sentenced to only 10 years imprisonment for the killing of Claire Parry. Time served is also being accounted into his sentence, and there has been a ruling that he will be eligible for parole, having served 2/3. This means that Timothy Bremner, the killer of Claire Parry, could be out of prison in as little as 6.5 years.
To murder again, probably, right?
He didn't murder, apparently.
I reckon he did. Where was the trial held?
Salisbury.
Salisbury. And they would have got the jury from Salisbury?
Yeah.
So are people in Salisbury, like, on a lower step of evolution?
I think it's because he's a police officer, and I also think it's because... I think it's because women's lives are not as valued, and when they're killed by abusers, especially considering that Claire was having an extramarital affair, I think there's a culture of blame, and it's that, oh, what did she expect? Well, she deserved it. That is a culture that still exists in this day and age.
But she's still a person.
She's a person, and no matter what she did, you can be a bad wife and still not deserve to be a murder victim. The two are not mutually exclusive. Like,
she's not less murdered because of the affair.
Right.
She's still murdered.
Right.
You know, when she was murdered.
Right.
By Timothy Bremner.
Allegedly.
I don't care, I'm saying it. He murdered her.
Can't, because we can get sued.
Well, fucking, my name's John Smith. Suck my dick.
Claire's husband, Andrew Parry, was understandably devastated by this sentence, saying that Timothy Bremner was the worst kind of thief, robbing their children of a million hugs and kisses from their mummy and any future hopes of reconciling their marriage. He denounced Bremner as a devious and well-practiced liar whose story was inconsistent and untruthful. And he is absolutely spot on. The man could not keep a single thread straight. He's a fucking liar and a bad one. In the hours following the sentence, several domestic abuse charities have put forth statements regarding the case, including Shaista Aziz from the domestic abuse charity Solace Women's Aid. Quote, "We welcome the judge making it clear that the violence inflicted on Claire Parry was deliberate. This is important. You can't accidentally break someone's neck. It's important the record was set straight there. However, the judge's comments that Bremer lost control is typical of the language used to justify violence against women and girls. And Bremer's suggestion that it just happened is typical of excuses made by perpetrators of abuse and violence. The Centre for Women's Justice, a charity whose mission statement is to hold the state accountable for violence against women and girls and ensure justice for victims of male violence, tweeted after this. Quote, "We know so many women serving life sentences for murder after lashing out in fear of their abusers. Yet this man, who has been described as using grooming techniques to exert coercive and controlling behaviour over women, escaped a murder conviction." And as you said at the beginning, this case holds several parallels with the killing of Reva Steenkamp. Oscar Pistorius shot her through a closed bathroom door in the middle of the night after prolonged and escalating coercive and controlling abusive behaviour, including things like nasty texts and put-downs and stringing her along and love-bombing her and then being violent the next minute. The behaviour is almost identical.
So you ain't got to worry about that with me because I'm always wearing your random gifts.
Hmm?
Like your socks right
You
now.
Couldn't control a wet paper bag, bless you. You're lovely and I love you very, very much. And one of the reasons I love you so much is because you have never, ever, ever tried to exert any control over me except for when I've got a migraine and you tried to pat me off to bed and not let me work.
You're damn bloody right, I do.
Oscar Pistorius, despite shooting Reva Steenkamp through a closed bathroom door in the middle of the night, claimed that it was an accident, that he had thought an intruder was in the house, and he was pictured sobbing hysterically often throughout the trial. He would only cry like this, though, when the cameras were on and when it was about him, not about Reva Steenkamp, the woman he killed.
You know, I've seen that behaviour before.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was this woman who killed her kid, locked him in a boot, and they suffocated. And
it's all crocodile tears.
Yeah, and there's literally video of her in the court. It was like, ha-ha, chatting. Judge comes in, cameras are rolling. Oh, I'm so sad that happened by accident. Mm-hmm. Bullshit.
So Oscar Pistorius, just like Timothy Bremer, was found not guilty of murder, but manslaughter only.
And I think they do have something in common, though.
Hmm?
They're both pieces of shit.
They're both pieces of shit.
Massive
well done.
Pieces of shit.
He was also given an extremely lenient sentence of only 6 years in prison.
For murder?
For killing Reva Steenkamp, yes.
When he murdered her?
According to the state, he didn't.
Okay. Well, I think this independent review says murder.
Allegedly. Laura Richard, a personal hero of mine, former behavioural analyst for Scotland Yard and founder of the UK's first charity for the advocacy of stalking victims, describes the warning signs of coercive control, which is a form of abusive behaviours, as the following. And the thing about coercive control is it's very insidious. It's hard to spot at first if you don't know what you're looking for. So, there's isolation, pressuring you to do things that you don't want to do. They insert themselves into your relationships. They criticise you and give you verbal abuse. Gaslighting. Threats against you, against your loved ones, your pets, or themselves, such as threatening self-harm and threatening to complete suicide. Where have we heard that in this case?
Yeah.
Superficial charm that is manipulative. Love-bombing, which is showering you with insane amounts of affection at first, and seeming like the man of, or the woman, but the man of the dreams in this case.
Mm-hmm.
To basically, it's like a mask of being a good partner, and it catches the victim off guard.
I actually saw something like that today, actually.
Mm.
I said YouTube on my phone. It's basically divorced parents in America. You've got the dad's, the mother's got custody, dad's got visitation rights, the kids come and stay at his for a bit. But when dropping off the kids one day, the eldest son was like, I really don't want to go in.
Aww.
I want to stay with you, Dad. And then the mum comes out and it's all like pretty much every single fucking word she says is coercive control. She's trying to manipulate her son to get out of the car. They call the police and stuff to try and like get the police. Police are like, you know what? He's made his decision. You guys are free to go. So he gets to leave with the son. But then she goes to custody court and basically he has stated multiple times that he has no intention whatsoever of going to stay with mother again because he fucking hates it there. And like, she doesn't care. She goes to court and gets a like a judge ruling to say that he has to go and stay with her. Yeah, curse control comes in many forms.
Yeah, it does.
It's insidious and shitty.
They will also apply strict rules and regulations, and this could be anything from what you eat, what you wear, if you're allowed to wear makeup, things like that, who you talk to. Disrespect, so putting you down, stalking, economic abuse, which is control of finances and resources, physical abuse, and sexual abuse. Sadly, and paradoxically, it is the victim who is often blamed and shamed for the perpetrator's behaviour, as if they are somehow complicit due to the familiarity of the setting where the abuse occurs. So you hear phrases like, why didn't she just leave? As opposed to, why is he allowed to abuse her?
Why is that piece of shit still doing what he's doing?
Mm-hmm. Most perpetrators of coercive control are serial and hone their trade craft over time by practicing on different victims, which again is what we see with Timothy Brammer.
Is that the guy that murdered?
The guy that, according to the state, did not murder Claire Parry.
Claire Parry is the one that was murdered, right?
Yeah, but apparently not by Timothy Brammer.
No? Then who murdered her?
Apparently not.
Ah, how confusing. Must have been so confusing for the jury sitting there going, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. I hope the chip shop's still open. They're saying to people something. I know I say about generalizations and sweeping statements, but if Salisbury is where they got the jury from, what's going on, Salisbury?
It's a police officer. People don't like convicting police officers.
Well, he fucking did it. People of Salisbury, please let us know what's going on. Is there something we need to be concerned about? Has COVID dropped the IQ or something? Please continue.
Offenders and abusers are not held responsible for their abuse, even when, in cases like Claire Parry, they kill. If you or someone you love is experiencing abuse, which I know is particularly bad at the moment with things like lockdown occurring, you are not alone. There are many organisations and charities out there who can help. In the UK, there is Women's Aid, Refuge for Women. There is Respect for Men in Abusive Relationships, and Gallup, who specialise in helping people in the LGBTQ plus community who are in abusive relationships.
Yeah, because it's not just
hetero couples.
It's something people, it's something that is forgotten about, and there is most definitely abuse.
Abuse is not defined by gender or sexuality at the end of the day.
Yep.
If you're a piece of shit, you're a piece of shit.
Yeah, and a piece of shit will physically, sexually, and mentally abuse their victim.
Anybody they can get their hands on.
Yeah, regardless of their gender or orientation or anything.
Yep. These are just a few of the charities in the UK. There will be organisations like this in your own country if you are outside of the United Kingdom. I'm going to put the contact details for these ones and others in the show notes below. For a victim of domestic abuse and violence, the time when they are trying to break free from their abuser is the most dangerous and when they are most likely to be killed. If you need to break free, don't do it alone. There are people out there who can help you and keep you safe. Women's Aid also offers this advice to try and help people keep safe when they're at risk until they can get out of the dangerous situation. Always keep your phone nearby, and if you are in danger, don't hesitate in calling 999. Familiarise yourself with the silent solution, which is how you can report abuse once the call connects with 999 without speaking. but instead by dialing 55. This is just specific to the UK. There will be a code for your area if you're outside of the UK, more than likely. This is a technique that's being adapted by a lot of different police forces now. So do look up the code in your area. What happens then is once you press 55 on the silent call, it alerts the dispatcher on the other end of the line that you are in imminent danger. You don't have to speak. They will speak to you and try and figure out where you are and what is going on. You can use coded language if you are able to speak to try and tell them anything you can. They advise that if you're able to speak at all, that they say tell them anything about where you are. So any landmarks, even if you can't give the address,
so even if you can
give them something to help them find you.
I'd say, like with the example earlier, a pizza delivery.
Yeah.
Because you need to give your location there.
Yeah.
They can very, very easily work in some yes or no questions about your situation and get you the right help.
Mm-hmm. But 55 is specifically for when you are in imminent danger. So they know you're in trouble just by punching that code in.
Mm-hmm. And they will listen and they'll try and find ways to get the information to help you. They understand that you probably can't speak as freely as you'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do whatever.
So it could be they give you yes or no questions and things like that. But it's something that's being put in place all over the world to try and help people when they're trapped in a dangerous situation. And even speaking out loud could be enough to endanger their life or their health. They also advise to always keep some money on you, even if it's only change for a payphone or a bus fare. If you've got long hair, and you wear it pulled back, a really good place to hide coins is tucked behind your hairband against your scalp underneath your hair. Because if you've got an economic abuse going on and you're not allowed any money, that's a very effective place to hide money. If you suspect that your partner is about to attack you, try and get to a lower risk area of the house. For example, where there is a way out or there is access to a telephone. Avoid the kitchen and the garage, where there's likely to be knives or other weapons. Avoid rooms where you might become trapped, such as the bathroom, or where you might be shut into a small space, such as a cupboard or a closet. So, obviously, we shouldn't have to give out advice like that. It's not, the onus is not on somebody who is being abused to stop it, but those tips might help. If you are caught in the worst possible situation, save your life until help can get to you.
So that's 999, punching 55 when it connects, and just try and give them what information
Give them whatever information you can. Make sure you are not somewhere where you are completely trapped.
Yep.
Claire Parry was clearly subjective to coercive control by Timothy Bremer, as were many other women. And as I said at the beginning of this, I do think that more information is going to come out as in the weeks and months coming forward. In 6.5 years, he could be free to abuse again. And Claire Parry's case is sadly just a drop in the ocean among the countless others who have been dismissed as inconsequential by the justice system. In the UK, you can write to the Crown Court for a sentence to be reviewed if you feel it is too low. You do not have to be involved in the case in any way to do this, and it can be done via email. I'm going to put the link on how to do this below, but I'm also going to tell you very clearly now. The email address to send an email to the Crown Court asking them to review a sentence is ULS, that's Uniform Lima Sierra, .referrals@attorneygeneral.gov.uk. In your email, you would need to contain the name of the person who received the sentence, which in this case is Timothy Bremer.
Now, I'm sure at this point, if you're writing this email, it might be difficult not to write
That piece of shit,
Timothy cocksucking Bremer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Try and stick to just a name. I know it's going to be hard because you might accidentally...
Emotive language won't necessarily help in this situation. Your email also needs to include the date that the sentence was given, which in this case was the 28th of October, 2020.
Yesterday,
at the time of recording. You need to include the court where the case was held, which in this case is the Salisbury Crown Court. And you need to include details of the crime that was committed / sentenced upon. Because let's not forget, in this scenario, the sentence versus the crime, in my opinion, are two very different things. Which, fortunately, for Timothy Bremer, if you've got this far in the episode, you have a fair bit of information on, I would say.
Yeah. Or the murder. The murder he done, like that.
Not according to the court. We cannot get him for murder, but we can try and get his sentence extended. Because for manslaughter in the UK, there is a possibility that he could have been sentenced to life. The judge was extremely lenient. So I implore you, personally, if you feel that 10 years maximum sentence that he's currently being given
maximum
for the heinous killing of Claire Parry is too short, please write to the Crown Court using the information that I've given you and implore them to review the sentence. Share this with your friends, share this with your family, with anybody you can that you think would agree and would also be willing to send an email. The email can only be written within 28 days of the original sentence.
Oh, shit.
Yep, so the word needs to get out as fast as you can.
Yep.
I will be sending mine tomorrow when the episode has gone out. I will put it up on our social media accounts so you can see what I've written. If you want to use it as a template, go nuts. Claire Parry and the people who love her, including her two children and her now widow husband, deserve better justice than has been provided. And Timothy Bremer needs to be prevented from hurting any other women because he will do it again when he gets out.
He's a piece of shit.
So that is the case of the killing of Claire Parry, which is supposedly now over. But for me, it's really not. I'm sure for her family, it's really not.
No.
And it needs to be highlighted and it needs to be fought. And we have the power to do something at least. We can make a lot of noise and a buggering nuisance of ourselves, if nothing else.
Criminally stupid?
Yeah, let's have a criminally stupid. Oh, and just to say as well, if further developments come out on this one, we will do an update.
Yep.
Because this one kept me up last night. I couldn't sleep.
This part of the new kind of... new show structure.
Yeah.
Let us know your thoughts. If you
we want to give you more content.
Right. Criminally stupid time.
Go on, Mum.
Let's go for a brighter note on things.
Mm-hmm.
Amadou Salafu, 18, is a ballsy lad. On the 20th of October, around 1 a.m, he, along with two accomplices, armed with cutlasses and guns, they forced their way into Jonathan Abbey's home. He owned a small-scale gold mine in Amasar, West District in Ghana.
Oh, dear.
Mr. Abbey gave them 20,000, and let me just make sure I get the pronunciation, Ghanaian cedi. It's about £2,500.
More than they deserve.
They weren't happy about that, and they gave him a few slaps with a sword, gave him a few cuts, but nothing major. They locked Mr. Abbey's in a room with his wife and kids before making their escape.
Oh my God, they had children there.
Mm-hmm. But the next day, however, perhaps a bit overconfident with himself, Amadou Salafu went to a popular drinking spot and got promptly drunk, then started to narrate the story of what he did to whoever would listen.
Oh, you fucking knob.
Not too pleased with this, patrons of the bar actually performed a citizen's arrest and dragged him to the police.
Said,
this piece of shit has fucking burgled someone. He told us everything.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
He got chucked into court and
fantastic. Oh, good. There you go, guys. Citizen's justice done the right way.
There you go.
That's a good way to end the episode after our little plea there.
Yeah.
Well, aww.
I do have something to add for our listeners.
Yes.
So, looking at the Timothy Bremer case and what happened to Claire Parry, I think it's important to remember the 30 seconds, the minimum 30 seconds that we went through earlier. During those 30 seconds, when he was in the seat behind her and he reached his arm around, closed it round her neck, slowly stopping the air supply, blood circulation to the brain, slowly sapping the life out of her, that only got 10 years. That's not quite fair, is it? Think about Claire. Send that email. Got 28 days to do it. Probably 27 now. Let's try and get something done.
Thank you very much for listening, everybody. If you send that email, please let us know. We want to know that Claire's story has been heard and that she matters. Fuck's sake, let's do another episode where I'm crying. If you'd like to follow us on social media, you can find us on Twitter at DeviantCrimePod. You can find us on Instagram at DeviantCrimePodcast. I will be putting a photograph of Claire up. I will not be putting one of Timothy Bremer.
Piece of shit.
If you want to email us, you can do so at DeviantCrimePodcast@gmail.com. Send us copies of the emails that you're sending to the Crown Court. We want to see them. We want to see that people care about this woman and that people want to fight for her, because apparently our justice system won't.
And share it with other podcasts.
Please share with other podcasts. Yeah, share it with people, even if they're not true crime.
The more people know about this, the better.
Yeah, because I don't know if anyone will outside of the UK or outside of the immediate kind of true crime community. So please get the word out. And if you want to join our Facebook group, you can find us at Deviant Crime Podcast. I'm crying, you bastards. This one has kept me up at night because it is so criminal what he has gotten away with. He's got away with murder.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck being the risk of being sued. He's gotten away with murder. Because Timothy Bremer didn't lose control of himself. He was losing control of Claire, and that's why he killed her. We have an opportunity to maybe do something. It's not much, but it's better than doing nothing.
Yep.
So please send that email. Please. I'm going to go and have a cry on stuff now, I think. Kind of a bummer ending, but this isn't a happy thing. This isn't important. A funny thing. This is really important. So thank you very much for listening, everybody. Yeah. We appreciate it. And we hope that you will join us in trying to do something to get Claire's family at least some semblance of justice. Until next week, maybe I'll do what would have been a Halloween-y episode next week to make up for this very, very sad and very, very appalling case that I've covered today. Speak to you soon. Love you all. Be safe.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.